I think we have everybody but Carlos.
Love Talk Radio.
Now won't you tell me what's wrong with love? And maybe we can fix it.
Nation Billing tonight's. Hey, you know what? I'm gonna let Sister Gidget tell you what tonight's topic is. Sister Gidget, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am, and thank you, DJ Black Caesar. I would like to begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is His messenger. I further bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is their divine reminder in our midst today. I would like to greet the listening audience as well as my distinguished panel in our greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
Thank you. Before we begin tonight, those of you who were able to join us on last week know that we're doing a three-part series on divorce called Before, During, and After. And this is the during part. We're going to talk about those things that happen during a divorce, when it is just absolutely inevitable that the couple cannot remain together. But before I do that, family, I wish you would allow me just a few minutes. If you would bear with me, I would be so remiss if I did not acknowledge the passing of our dear brother, Reuben Muhammad, out of Houston, Texas, of Muhammad's Mosque number 45, known on Facebook as Reuben Real Thoughts Muhammad. There's not any genre of life that this beloved brother did not cover. He was a father, you know, of three sons, as well as a father and a mentor for a lot of children in the Houston community. He was always on the front line. He was the top soldier in Student Regional Minister Roberts' security team. He, if I'm not mistaken, it was either football or baseball, I can't remember, it might have been both, that he was also a little league coach. So this brother made a great impact in his day-to-day life. And then as he began to battle with pancreatic cancer, he openly shared with us on Facebook, either day-to-day and, of course, in the latter part, week-to-week, of what his status was. And for those of you who may recall the January 13th episode that we did with Brother Reuben, called Prayers for Reuben, he so graciously verbalized everything that he had been through, and to inspire others and to uplift others and to show us how to just face our trials head on. And he kept the faith all the way until the end. And so I thank Allah for granting him the time. March 1st was his birthday, and Brother Reuben expressed that he had never had a birthday party. And so with Allah's permission, with the Mosque 45 family and the community in Houston, he was able to celebrate his 45th birthday at the Shape Community Center in Houston, Texas. And so Allah blessed us with him for 45 years and 11 days. And so I just want to say may Allah be pleased with our dear brother. He was an officer and a gentleman and a diamond among the FOI, and he will be greatly missed. Okay, that's all I wanted to say about that. Let me allow my panel to introduce themselves. So, Brother Walter, this is your brainchild, front and center soldier. Come on down and reintroduce yourself. Wa alaikum salam. How are you?
I'm fine by Allah's grace, and also deeply, you know, in thought about our brother, Brother Reuben. May Allah bless him and his works, and condolences to his family as well, and the family and community of the Nation of Islam in which he served as an FOI. And I'm greatly humbled myself, sister, to have befriended my brother on Facebook and had the opportunity to be inspired by many of his posts, many a days, and, you know, his condition. And as you said, he shared a lot of that with us, and may Allah be pleased with him.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, tell us something about Brother Walter now.
Okay, yes, ma'am. Brother Walter out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Been in the Nation of Islam for 16 years, striving to be a good reflection of an FOI, a husband, a father, ex-husband, and a brother to my community and those of us who strive in Allah's way. So I'm remarried to my beautiful wife, Sister Ami, who is on the line and participating on the panel, and just striving by Allah's grace to be a good husband as and an example to her as well.
Yes, sir. Brother Walter, you sound like you either fighting or are you still at work?
I'm at work, actually. I'm multitasking, trying to do the channel halfway on mute, halfway, working. So I'm just bear with me, please, family. I am trying to make a few things happen, but I'm gracious for the opportunity.
Yes, sir. Okay. I didn't want anybody to think anything was wrong. I wasn't trying to call you out, but you know, I noticed the noise, and so I know you were busy doing something. And let us allow your better half to come down front and center. Sister Cinquetta, and introduce yourself.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. I'm Sister Cinquetta. I'm out of Philadelphia, PA. I've been in the Nation of Islam for 20 years, and I have a beautiful, beautiful husband that I love very much, Brother Walter Muhammad, who's also on the panel tonight. And that's all I have to say. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Okay, and all the way from Cleveland, Ohio, my dear sister Patricia Muhammad, come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum, believing family. I am Sister Patricia Muhammad from Cleveland, Ohio. I've been in the Nation for 22 years, and I was married for 28 years, and I am divorced. And inshallah, one day I will find that special FOI and get remarried.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Were we not able to reach Brother Carlos again, DJ Black Caesar? Sir? Okay, maybe he got his phone on mute or something. Okay, we'll try to catch Brother Carlos out of Watts, California, later on in the episode. He was going to join us as well. Okay, so now we're back to during the divorce. And so during the divorce, Sister Patricia, what is the first thing that happens? I mean, I'm going to go from the point of separation, because usually before the divorce, there is a period of separation. So can you expound on, you know, separation and the effects of it?
Yes, ma'am. Well, in my case, we separated twice before we got the divorce, and I believe the most difficult decision in my life was to get a divorce. That was the most difficult decision I've ever made, and just about the hardest thing that I've ever done was to move out of the home. I have two children, but they were adults, and they were, you know, living on their own at that time, but it was still very, very difficult for me to leave. And my ex-husband, he actually helped me move and, you know, made sure that I was secure. But it was extremely difficult. It was just almost impossible. But I did go ahead and move out, and it was the very first time that I lived on my own, because I left my mother's home and moved into my husband's home. And so that was extremely difficult for me. I did have my own business, and I was working a job, so I kept busy. It was a very different time for me, that I had never experienced anything like that in my life. That was the first time
Yes.
that I moved out. And I did go back to try to reconcile. And it just did not work. So the second time I moved out, I didn't really have assistance. So I was on my own, and it was financially very difficult because my husband was the basic breadwinner, so it was financially difficult. But it was also a peaceful time for me because I was able to get peace of mind out of my home. So that's what it was
okay.
like.
Okay, and that's very odd because usually the woman is not the one that leaves. So, Brother Walter, let me ask you, that period of separation when you actually leave the household, you know, what's going through your mind when you're in that process?
I know particularly for myself, I went through different phases. One point was, confusion, because a lot of times there's a lot of mixed emotions about what's going on and, trying to process everything that's happening. And a lot of times it's usually at a pretty ratchet rate. So, for me, I was juggling different situations, as far as, what's going on emotionally with my spouse at the time. What's going on with myself? Is it also a thing of rejection, dealing with rejection, and then dealing with the back and forth feelings of can this work? Is it going to work? And sometimes, when you're going through that process, we have a tendency to not, totally be resolved with our feelings. So, Patricia had pointed out, you try reconciliation only to find sometimes that it's only a temporary fix because we're not really getting the proper help that we need to try to, put our situation in perspective. So myself, again, I'm dealing with the financial aspect because if I have to move out, that takes on a whole nother level of financial responsibility that not only am I committed for myself, but I also have to take consideration for my former spouse and children. That aspect of the finances, and it's just so many different emotions, shame, guilt, fear, in a sense, because, now you have to share this information with your family and friends and people, and you don't want to be judged, you don't necessarily want to put your whole situation out there. Sometimes I know for myself, I wasn't one that really wanted to go public with a lot of the different things that were going on in the marriage, and for fear that if we did reconcile, you don't want your friends and family to look at you like all of that. So, it's a lot of different things going on.
Yes, sir. And I think we have Brother Carlos joining us now. So, Brother Carlos, come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
Brother Carlos from Los Angeles. That's me.
And you married? You single? You got children?
I'm divorced, single, two sons.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Brother Carlos. And we were just talking about separation. So can you expound on that for us? What is that like? Well, what was it like for you? And, I know Brother Walter mentioned the financial aspects, but I want to know emotionally, what are you thinking when you're at that point? Are you leaving out of bitterness or just to give the relationship some space and time? What are you thinking during that process?
What me and my ex went through, it was a lot of childishness, foolishness. I wasn't very wise, and we was both young. I think both of us not growing up without a father had a role to play in it, but we just went back and forth with childish games. And when we first separated, I had got a job, and I went to Detroit, then I went to Connecticut, then I went to New York, and I didn't hear from her for probably like 3 months. You know, I would call, like her family would be like, I don't know where she at, you know. And, you know, I mean, that would just make me so mad, you know, because I wanted to talk to my son. You know, and I remember I was in New York and he turned one. I was calling on his birthday, you know, nobody wouldn't answer the phone. But, I mean, the whole thing, you know, it just made me angry, you know, like you're trying to, you know, you're thinking like, damn, this is my son, this is my wife. You know, I mean, you kind of think, you know, you have rights to it. But, you know, I mean, the whole thing, it was just bad all around.
Yes, sir. Okay, and Sister Sanquetta, what was separation like for you?
Well, for me, I had actually, we separated twice. The first time we separated, well, both times we separated, we tried to reconcile, and no, it didn't really work. It didn't work at all. But during that time, it was very, very frustrating. It was embarrassing. I went through the feeling of rejection, the feeling of, you know, what did I do wrong? What could I have done better? I went through those things. And then also it was anger. I had a lot of anger because of the situation. The situation was, you know, my ex-husband had cheated on me, and the young lady didn't live too far from me. So, you know, I would see her throughout the neighborhood from time to time. So during the separation, when I should have, I guess, been focusing on myself and my children, it was very, very difficult to do that. It was very difficult, you know, because I was seeing that young lady. I was upset that this whole thing had happened after so many years of being married. And then I had to see my children in pain. And that hurt me so much as well because, you know, trying to hide or shield them from, you know, the reality of what was really going on. And it was just a very, very difficult time. It was very difficult.
Okay, so this is what I want to know because, you know, I'm pretty sure it might be different for other people because it was different for me. During the time of separation, what is really going through your mind? Now, I know you, Sister Sinquella, you said, you know, you went through anger, you felt rejected, you know, but, you know, are you really focusing on the marriage when you're separated? Or are you really focused on going forward? Because to me, it would seem mm-hmm. that if you take such a step to uproot, you know, your domicile, to leave your home and to move out and away from that person and even away from your children, to me, I think things would have to be pretty, pretty bad. And then what is the mindset? You know, are you planning your life without your spouse or are you planning, you know, reconciliation? I want to hear from the brothers because I'm going to tell you now, this is just statistics. This is not supposed to get you pointing the finger, blaming nobody. But most times what I found is that a lot of infidelity occurs if it was not part of the issue of the separation in the first place. A lot of infidelity occurs during separation because mm-hmm. there's this feeling of entitlement. You know, I did all I can. I spent all the money. I spent all the time. I was there. I listened. I prayed. I did whatever. And, you know, my marriage went wrong. So the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to go grab the first hunk I see or the first honey I see, and this is going to take it off my mind. So I'm going to go to the gentleman first because I want to know, in all honesty, what were you thinking during your time of separation?
I'm going to start with Brother Walter. I had to chuckle a little bit, Sister. I knew it was going to come in my direction first, so I had to chuckle. But all praise is due to Allah. yes, for me, it was different phases of a separation, because I don't think you have the same mindset. I know, speaking for myself, I can't really speak for everybody, because everybody processes things differently. But I know for myself, I had different mindsets during different parts of my separation. My separation lasted 18 months because of the state that I lived in and resided in at that time. You needed at least 18 months for a legal separation to have a finalized divorce. So for 18 months, I went through different phases. The first maybe 6 months, I went through the phase of, okay, you got 6 months for us to try to reconcile. And, if we can't pull it together within 6 months of me living outside of, the residence, then I'm going to, pretty much move forward, because it was no need to, go back at that time. And then based on the situation of how, my ex-spouse and I had, separated, it was pretty much a done deal. Then after that, became the validation period for me, where, I felt like I had to validate myself again, because I felt like I was rejected in a way, like you said earlier. I did what I was supposed to do as a man. I thought I was, a good example and so forth, but what went wrong? So now I'm going through the motions of being in a mosque and doing the things I need to do, seemingly in the mosque, but deep down inside, because I'm not healing properly and not getting proper guidance, or I'm not taking proper guidance based on what we're being taught, I'm going down a darker road. So the darker road is having me attract myself to people who aren't necessarily for me at this particular time, and that I shouldn't even be pursuing based on the situation. It wasn't so much infidelity at that point, because the marriage was, in my eyes as well as my ex-spouse's eyes, dissolved. We just going through the motions of finalization in the divorce process. But in that process, I'm still a man, and I'm trying to validate myself to, feel like a man who's done the right thing. So now I'm attracted to people who it's really not for me. It's not the time. So in that situation now comes, another situation, being in a relationship with someone who I'm not married to. So, of course, in our world, in our community, and our teachers, that's fornication, also adultery. And just keeping it real, that's what it starts to, build up, because now you're not taking time to properly focus on yourself and heal. So now these feelings and things come up. So now comes a double life, because you can't talk about that to the community, because, of course, you're going to be, dealt with for how you're handling yourself as a Muslim. So now, comes the secrecy, the covering up, the shame, and all of the above. But at the same time, I still need to feel validated. So that was, part of the phases that I went through.
Okay. And Brother Carlos, what about you?
Well, for me, I always held out hope that, that we would work it out, that everything would get better, and, that we'd just stay married and just be happy. But, it'll be on and off, so, eventually we just got divorced.
But when you were separated, though, did it ever cross your mind? Did you feel that feeling of entitlement that you had given it all you got and, you just needed some immediate comfort or whatever, and you just, Are you, whether you did or not, I don't want to know. I just want to know if you thought about it. No confessing in Islam.
Traveling all the time, always on the road, and then a thing that got on my nerves is if I call and she can answer the phone, that right there used to really hurt my nerves, you know, because I'm like out of town by myself in a hotel room staring at four walls, you know. I mean, I needed somebody to talk to. But, I mean that's about it, you know. I mean, I just need a companionship, you know, and, you know, it's just so crazy, you know, that I wasn't getting it.
Right, right. Okay, I can understand that. Okay, I'm going to go to my beloved sisters. Because, you know, sisters in particularly, we don't like to talk about our infidelity. But I think I got two for real sisters up here. So let's talk about if it crossed our mind. Did we think that that was just something that maybe we should have done or something we should have considered? Does it cross our mind out of the anger, out of the feeling of rejection? So I'm going to start with you, Sister Patricia.
Yes, ma'am, I knew you would. actually, it's interesting that the brother mentioned that he needed companionship. I found myself talking to a brother, actually, not an FOI, a brother from my job. And it was like I was going through pain and he was going through pain in his relationship, and we just ended up talking so much that, you know, there was an attraction there, but there was never any, and I can't say there wasn't any infidelity, but because even being in a relationship, talking to someone is infidelity in my book. So there was someone that I needed to talk to, and that's what I did.
So did you feel as though you were cheating?
No, I didn't, actually. I did not. I didn't feel it was, but actually it was.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Sister Cinquetta, what about you?
Well, initially, when we had separated, I didn't even think about, you know, seeing another man or talking to another man or anything. But as time went on and things didn't resolve itself, and my anger just grew. And not just because of the relationship wasn't working. I just felt like, and it's really bad to say this, but I'm going to be honest, I just felt like God had given up on me, because I felt like I was doing the right thing. You know, I was trying to be an NGT, I was trying to be a great mother, great wife, and, you know, everything had failed. Even though that was a very silly way to think at the time, that's how I felt. So I slowly stopped participating in the mosque as I should. And then a few years, you know, after the separation or whatever, I did, met someone and was talking to that person and wound up getting into a relationship with that person. So, yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about reflection, because, you know, I think that it is important that we do, you know, reflect on the things that, you know, we did wrong, or how we were wronged in our relationship. And I just want to make sure, you know, I'm just asking, when you think back, did you think that you reacted out of raw emotion at that time when you decided to separate? I mean, you know, like, was it more like get out, you know, or whatever? Or was it like, okay, I've sat down, I've thought about it, I can't go through the day-to-day arguing or whatever kind of discord was going on? Or did you just abruptly say in a heated argument, get out, it's time for to go, or either, you know, you decide to pack your bags and leave? And I wonder if it happened that way, did you have time later to reflect on the things that went wrong and how you could possibly fix it? Or was the bitterness so embedded that it just never crossed your mind? And I'm going to go to you, Brother Carlos. Brother Carlos, are you there? Oh, okay, I think we lost him. Okay. Okay, Sister Cinqueta, are you there? Okay, Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am, I'm still standing, praising Allah.
Okay, I don't know what happened. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. As for myself, yeah, reflection, it didn't pretty much come to me until after or towards, like, some years after my first marriage because, you know, initially my pride, I was a lot younger or a little bit younger than we're talking about maybe 12 years from or 13 years ago for my first divorce. And, you know, at that time it was pretty much ego and pride that, you know, fueled me because in my situation I felt justified in, you know, just moving on with the divorce. So a lot of times I didn't have time for really reflection. And when I did reflect, I didn't want to get into beating myself up for what I thought, you know, was a no-fault situation on my own. But as you get older and you begin to mature a little bit more, you begin to hopefully see yourself and see some things that you could have done in the throughout the course of the marriage differently and study those things and try to grow from those things. So, you know, I always tried to focus on more so not becoming bitter or angry because my thought at that time was always trying to make the situation more comfortable for my children because besides how I feel about it and what I thought and all of those things, I didn't want the effect to be on them. So I did a lot of things to try to insulate my children from, you know, the effects of what had been done throughout the separation and the divorce.
Yes, sir. Okay, I just want to check and make sure. Did we get Sister Cinqueta and Brother Carlos back?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Okay. I know they're having problems with the phone line. Sister Patricia, you mentioned that T-Mobile was having some problems. So, and I think Blog Talk might be having some problems as well. Everybody having computer problems today. We love technology. At the same time, we hate technology. So we still have to try to make it work. Okay, so now let me move away from that for a minute because I want to talk more or less about the infidelity, and I just want to get a roundtable opinion. And then I think my co-host, Brother Derek, are you there? Brother Derek? Okay, maybe he's not there. Okay, but I just want to know, is infidelity a deal breaker? Round table, yes or no? Brother Walter?
No.
at this stage of life, indeed, it's for a man, I know particularly a man like myself, pride is a big issue when it comes to infidelity, and I don't think I could really work past my pride in that way. I don't have that kind of, you know, heart and sentiment that once you become intimate with somebody that I can just, like, let that go. That's just me. Maybe Allah has to grow me in a certain kind of way, but based on all the scriptures I read, Allah says I am God and I'm a jealous God. So if I'm the reflection of God, then I take that same sentiment.
Okay, Brother Carlos, is infidelity a deal breaker?
Yes, ma'am, it's a deal breaker.
Okay, Sister Patricia?
Well, you know, there was infidelity in my marriage, and I never, ever wanted to get a divorce. I just never wanted to get a divorce. And so I forgave. I didn't forget, but I did forgive. And it's something that I really, really had to work through with myself because I just wanted my marriage to work. And so it took a long time, but I did. It was not a deal breaker, but I could say Well, I know I won't say that. But it was not a deal breaker. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing because none of us are perfect. And once we have knowledge of self, we know better. And so at the time, we were just young, you know, young and crazy. So I dealt with it because I just wanted my marriage to work.
Okay, so by you being divorced and single now, going forward, is it a deal breaker?
Yes, ma'am, I would say it is. I would say it would be.
Okay, Sister Cinquetta?
Well, Venus, though, my husband's on the line. I don't know if I'm going to answer this question. But no, it's not a deal breaker for me. It isn't. Not at all.
Okay, now are you saying that because your husband is on the line or because that's
no,
the truth?
No, that's the truth. That's the truth.
Sister, may I interject, and I don't mean to turn this into me and my wife, but it may not be a deal breaker, but it's definitely a head and a jaw breaker. So I can't do it. I wouldn't do it. I told my wife I didn't get into this for that. So, you know, I give her full permission to do what she needs to do if I'm ever caught in that type of situation.
And I know your wife be going to martial arts class, so I know you're not going to take that chance.
No, ma'am.
Wow.
No, ma'am.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm just going to be honest, you know, about my situation because, you know, I was the one that cheated. So it was amazing to me how understanding my ex-husband was at the time. And, you know, when I think about it, in all honesty, if the tables were turned, I wouldn't have forgiven so easily, you know. I mean, I would have forgiven, but I wouldn't have stayed. But that's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. So, Brother Walter, how more likely is it that, especially during long-term separation, how likely is it, in your opinion, that infidelity would occur? Brother Walter, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry, Queen. I was talking and I didn't take the mute off. Are you talking separation with the term of, with the possibility of reconciliation or separation with the intention of finalization of the divorce?
Both.
Okay, well, I think that's up to the individuals in terms of where they're at with the marriage and the emotional ties to the marriage because, there's some people that just have a certain resolve about themselves that it's not over until it's really over. And even after it's over, I need to purge and get myself together because I don't want to be messy for somebody else or complicate the situation worse. Then there's some people who need the validation like, you know, I did in my case because I felt like I did everything the right way and I didn't understand why I was given or in the situation that I was in. So I think it's basically a case-by-case situation. You know, there's some sisters who just have that resolve that, hey, look, I'm not going to deal with nobody until this situation is over. And then even then, I have to be careful because I don't want to run my head into a brick wall again. You know, but I think for brothers, and not trying to generalize, but it's a little bit more, you know, like, on the ego thing for us, you know, we're not as a lot of times emotionally is caught up and it's kind of like, well, you know, she did it or, you know, I just need to, you know, be with somebody. And a lot of times it may not be in a marriage situation or sometimes it could be in a marriage situation, but we haven't properly took the steps to heal. And then we go into something not really being fully prepared for that and all the challenges that come with that.
Yes, sir. Okay. And then, Brother Carlos, in your opinion, is it more likely to occur with long-term separation? Infidelity, I mean.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, because it's hard to fathom that you have a wife and you can't touch her, you can't see her, you know. I mean, you miss being around her, then it just automatically come like, okay, well, I'm about to do something else, you know. I mean, it just come that easy.
Okay. So what about the sisters? Sisters, how y'all feel about that?
As far as a long-term separation? Well, you know, I like I said, I had met someone and I was talking to when I was separated, and it could have gotten physical, but I just refused. I just refused to do it because I was still married. So I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it.
Okay.
I was still honoring my married spouse, I guess
you could say. Yes, ma'am. And Sister Patricia?
Yes, ma'am. That was me.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Sister Sinclair. Okay, y'all beginning to sound alike now. Okay, Sister
Sinclair. I have to agree with Brother Walsh. I believe that it is a case-by-case situation. However, the longer that couples are separated, I could see how it could be for someone to, you know, possibly get involved with someone else. Just, you know, if you're in a relationship with someone, especially for a long time, you start to yearn to have someone in your life. And it may not be someone that's supposed to be there or someone that's good for you or, you know, someone you should even be talking to at the time. But I could definitely see how, you know, if you are, you know, separated for a long period of time, it could be a possible chance that you can want to get into a relationship with someone else.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, and we're going to talk about the finances but before we do that, I just want to give some pointers because I don't want to just talk about, you know, what people have been through as a marriage counselor. What I want to do is offer these pointers that if there is a time that you decide to separate, it's my professional advice that you really take that time to reflect on your errors. And that is what that time is for. You really sit back and evaluate the value of your marriage and what your vows that you took on that day actually mean. And also, rid yourself of bitterness and understand that the other individual is just a mere human being. And that as we live day to day, we are evolving, we are growing. Now, some are growing into something great. Others may be growing into a big mess. But take a wise evaluation of that and consider the fact that the other person, and always, if possible, keep the lines of communication open. And always consider go through the process of atonement, even if it's just by yourself, because that rids you of what they call baggage that you will transfer over into the new relationship. So even if that person is not atoning with you, even if that person is not atoning at all, atone for yourself so that you can cleanse yourself and be better for the next time around. Okay, so the second part I want to get into are the finances, because you know, they take statistics on black marriages. Some of them are, you know, questionable. But oftentimes, it is the finances that divide us. And I just want to speak to that. How many of you think that that may have been the basis of your separation or even ultimately the cause of your divorce? Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am. Well, no, in my particular situation, it wasn't really a financial situation. I'm not going to say we were set in stone financially, but at that particular time, I had been working at a particular job and was making, you know, a nice, you know, a pretty decent living. And my spouse at the time, you know, she had, you know, was doing pretty good. And it went country. So our situation wasn't so much financial. I mean, every family has their different dynamics about finances, but it wasn't really financial. Ours was more on an emotional communication level, you know, and I think that was the ultimate demise. It became financial as the separation and ultimately the divorce came about, but that wasn't the initial thing for us, finances.
Okay, so among the rest of you, was finances any part or the cause of the divorce, Sister Patricia, Brother Carlos, or Sister Cinquetta?
For me, this is Sister Cinquetta. For me, it wasn't finances at all. Mine's just strictly infidelity, so it wasn't finances at all.
Okay, Brother Carlos?
No, mine wasn't financial either.
And Sister Patricia?
Well, I'd say mine was a combination of finances and other things. Finances did have a part in it, but it wasn't the camel's back, per se.
Okay. Because, you know, if finances are not the root of what happens, most definitely, after a point of separation, money comes into play. And that has to be a difficult transition because you have to look at it from, I'm looking at it from a brother's perspective. If, you know, let's just say hypothetically that the wife is not working, but matters are such that you have to leave the household, and if you don't have a relative or somewhere that you can go, if you're having to, you know, lease an apartment or whatever, and try to maintain that family, you know, that is another burden that can really, really stress out the marriage. And so after the separation, Brother Carlos, you know, is there still that financial obligation there, not just necessarily to the children, but to the household itself, and how do you handle that?
A financial obligation?
Yes, sir.
Well, I get money taken out of my check. That's how it's handled.
Well, I mean, not when you separated, right?
Oh, I thought you meant like now. I thought you said
No. Like when you separate, you know, like sometimes when we separate, if your wife is not working or if you know that her income cannot maintain the household itself, you know, does that contribute to just, you know, you desiring to just get a divorce and cut ties because of the additional financial strain that you may have to spend money elsewhere to live?
Well, it creates a battle because then, you know, she separated, you know, she left, she don't want to be here, so then So I'm like, okay, well, I don't have to give you no money. You know, it becomes that kind of battle. You know, you want to leave, you don't want to do this, you don't want to do that, then I shouldn't have to pay for nothing. You know, that's the kind of thing it becomes. Well, that's what it became between me and her.
Oh, okay. Okay, and Brother Walter, how you feel about that?
Man, I don't think we got enough time to talk about that, Sister Kidget, as far as how I feel about it. But in my situation, it was me starting off initially trying to be noble and do the right thing. Again, you know, you're fueled with so many different emotions and feelings about things. And when you think about your children having a certain type of lifestyle and living a certain type of way, my ideas and trying to be a noble man and not trying to exalt myself or anything like that, but this is just true story and what happened in my situation. You know, my mindset was that I didn't want my children to suffer in any way that they didn't have to suffer. That's where I started off with. And, you know, I walked out of the home basically after, you know, the situation was made clear that, you know, we weren't going to be a couple. I walked out of a nice home with everything furnished and all of that, just basically taking, you know, the clothes and my personal belongings with me. And, again, I didn't want to start snatching this and taking that and doing this because I felt the children would have more of an effect of it. And the material stuff to me at that time didn't mean much. You know, it wasn't to the point to where I had to have it. So a lot of that was left, you know, and I tried to do the noble thing. But as tensions grow throughout, you know, now trying to make this thing finalized, now it gets into, okay, hold on, you know, you're not going to play me like this. And, you know, it just starts getting nasty. And like Brother said, the battle starts, you know, happening. And then you start trying to say, well, wait a minute, you caused all of this, you know, depending on who's siding, you know, who's looking at who is the cause. And, you know, then it becomes, you know, okay, well, look, you know, we can't sit down civilly because, again, I try to do things civilly because I don't have the money to necessarily pay lawyers. But then when it gets into this and that, now we have to get a lawyer involved and let them sort it out, and then we're in court. So it starts off, you know, for me trying to be noble, and then it just turns into a big fiasco at some point. And then, you know, that's when the real kind of bitterness comes into play, and then you kind of really forget all of the good things that the person may have contributed during the marriage, you know, and now everything is nasty and bitter and, you know, just it's just, you know, laced with venom. And, you know, that's when you have to kind of take a step back and, you know, pick and choose what you're really going to do and how you're going to do it. Because, again, if you have children, you got to think the effect of what the children are going to feel, not today, not necessarily next week, but down the road. And that's where my thoughts lie pretty much with my children. So, yeah, the finances became a mess. And, you know, I'm still, truth be told, paying for something that happened 13 years ago. You know, my wife will bear witness that, you know, I was just as recent as stressed this week. And, I mean, I just felt like I was going through it. And, you know, she had to kind of give me some comfort and ease. And, you know, praises be to Allah. But it can even continue, you know, years down the road. So, yeah, finances get really grimy sometimes.
Okay, and for the sisters, did y'all ever feel as though, you know, I'm angry at him, you know, he's disappointed me, he's hurt me, so I'm going to hit him where it hurts in the pocket. Did any of our sisters ever get into that attitude, Sister Cinquetta?
No, ma'am, I didn't, and, you know, I had so many of my friends and sisters and even my own mother had told me how stupid I was for not, you know, taking him right to court, trying to get alimony, child support, and everything. I felt as though as long as him and I could work out the situation, that's what we would do. And it started off like that. However, as things started to progress and we, you know, knew that we were not going to be together, things started to get a little rough financially for me.
My ex-husband made quite a bit more than I did. He made a lot more than I did. So I had found myself working either two jobs or working extra on the one job that I had, where it felt like I was working two jobs. Sometimes I would work 16 hours a day just to compensate for the income that was not coming in anymore. So it got very rough for me.
Okay. And Sister Patricia?
Yes, ma'am. Well, my situation was kind of, I don't want to say unique because I don't know what other people have gone through, but it was quite different from what I had ever heard of. But I needed to be out of that marriage, and so I left with nothing. I didn't want to hurt him because he didn't want the divorce, but I wasn't going to keep living if I stayed, so I had to leave. So I took a bed and my belongings, and I did ask for alimony, and I got a small amount of alimony, and only for 1 year. I was entitled to like 13 years of alimony, but I didn't want to hurt that man anymore. I just wanted to be out, and he complained a little bit about we actually negotiated about the monthly amount, and I was working. At one point, I was working three jobs, and I was really just killing myself after I left and working three jobs, so I stopped doing that. And after the alimony stopped, I really started having a really, really hard time. And so, I was almost homeless. Actually, I was homeless. And he actually let me move back in into my own room. And it was quite a unique situation. We're friends today, but the finances is a big thing. It's a really, really big thing. And I was blessed to not have to. I'm sorry?
No, I'm saying the thing. I was waiting on you.
So it is a big thing. It's a big adjustment. Like I said earlier, I had never lived on my own. And so it was a very big adjustment. And I didn't mention earlier, but when I decided to get a divorce, I thought about it for years. I mean, for a very, very, very long time. And so when I decided that I wanted a divorce, that was it. And during that time, my daughter, who was 25 at the time, 25 years old, she stopped speaking to me. And so it was very difficult. My son, however, he was more concerned with me being happy. So I moved back in with my ex-husband, and I would go to my daughter's house from time to time. Our relationship healed, but it was a very difficult time, and the finances is a big issue.
Yes, ma'am. All right, well, we're going to take a call from area code 832 has a question. And I think I know this now, but I think this young man belongs to me. Area code 832-660, your mic is live.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, my name is Taryn, calling from area code 832.
Yes, Taryn, you have a question.
This is, hello, mother. How are you doing?
I am fine, my son. This is my youngest son, Taryn. How are you this evening?
Hi, how's everybody doing?
Well, we all good. Yes, sir.
This is the special edition on divorce part two, right?
Yes, sir.
I was, I'm, you know, not too accustomed with the rules and regulations of the show. Is it just for questions or also statements?
Either one.
I know, of course, everyone on the show knows that, you know, marriage is a covenant between man, woman, and God, and I would, you know, I just had a statement, an idea. Just something that I wanted to mention on the topic, if you will.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Proceed.
To alleviate a lot of problems with marriage. I believe is to, before you get to that point, it's really important to seek God in the person that you're seeking. I mean, that I know that's been thrown around a lot and very cliche these days, but when a man or a woman seeks God in each other before they even utter the words marriage, and God, of course, when you seek Him, He'll reveal the truth. And when you seek that, and when you learn this person, and you learn of their ways, and you see righteousness in them, it can really, really, you know, if you're looking for the right thing, it can really, really alleviate a lot of problems. From you name it, from financial to you learn a part of God in this person to the point where they know how to build you up as a woman, or the woman builds you up as a man, and have the confidence in you that God has in you. That goes a long way, and I know this sounds very, you know, 101 right now, but I just wanted to mention that if I could.
Well, absolutely, and I thank you, my son. This is my youngest son, so I still call him my baby, and he is a newlywed, so I am so glad that you went through all those processes before you decided to get married, my child.
Oh, well, I learned from the best.
Well, thank you for calling me, and let me ask you a question, Taryn, while you're on here. So do you think that we're getting married for the wrong reasons these days?
Yes, I really feel that, and this is not to insult people, but I just don't think that people really think it through what it means. It's a covenant with God. It's almost like you're supposed to be shaking when you get married, because when you get married under God, you're held with a whole new accountability. You're looked at different. You have a code that you must step up and live by, from the responsibility of being loyal and supporting and faithful and the lead, and the woman being supportive and obedient to her husband, and the man being respectful and honoring his wife. I don't think a lot of people really grasp the concept of how durable you have to be and how disciplined you have to be to take that step. It's once people get into the mindset of how disciplined you got to be with God first and seek Him first before you can do that, it's nothing that a man and a woman can do on their own. A marriage is too powerful of a thing. When you think of the origination of marriage, where it came from, the order that God has marriage in, we can't do that on our own. We need Him in it. And a lot of people are just, they take Him in it on the day of, but that next day it's all them, and God is gone from the equation. And that leads you slowly but surely down the path of, I won't say destruction, but unfortunate events. When you develop that discipline on your own, before even seeking that person, you know, you inspire that person so much to be a better person. They won't have thoughts of doing things on the side. They won't have thoughts of doing this, because the more godly you are, it's harder it is for people to admit it. It's harder to hurt a person that's godly like that. And following Him, you don't want to see that person hurting, and you just get positive results from seeking Him, especially in your marriage. And I just don't think that people are really grasping the concept of how important it is.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, and I am so proud that you are so well-spoken, and I have to brag again. This is my baby. Thank you, Taryn, for calling in.
Thank you. Love you, Mama. Talk to you soon.
Love you, too. All right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. All right. That was my baby, y'all. Okay, and we got a call from area code 314. 314, your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Kareem. How are you?
Find all praises due to Allah who came in the person of Master Farah Muhammad. And congratulations. That was fantastic. I was listening. You know, it's good to hear your offspring stepping in the right direction, moving forward, taking what she taught them.
I was really shocked because he's never called in before. I mean, none of my children do. And I was just so shocked. But, yes, that was my baby boy. That's my 28-year-old. He's a twin to a girl.
Yes, ma'am. All praise is due to Allah. Well, he's right on point in what he said. I mean, I only caught the last part of it, but he's right on point in what he said. I mean, that is indeed the situation today. The majority of individuals do not understand that what a marriage is. You know, I mean, and I say he's right on point. I mean, it's, you know, the fact, like you said, it's a covenant. It's not a contract. It's a covenant. And a covenant, according to Scripture, can only be broken by God. That's why we say the vows, till death do us part, because only God can take life. So, And you got to go into it with the attitude that you're going to do whatever it takes to make it work. You know, I mean, so like I said, he's right on point. I love it. So I apologize for being late. I was actually at Muhammad's Mosque number 28 helping to feed the hungry people. But I had to get in and get to the show because I need to get some of this wisdom from y'all.
Well, Brother Kareem, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your constant support. And Brother Kareem is the new host of our Monday night show, Conscious Black Nation. So thank you, dear brother, for always being there. Thank you so much.
All praises due to Allah. That's what we're here for. That's what we live for. Otherwise, ain't nothing happening.
Yes, sir. Okay, let me remind the listening audience that if you have a question, please press 1 on your dial pad. Those of you in the chat room, please type your questions in and we'll ask them on your behalf. Okay, let me get back to my panel here that's very quiet. So let me just ask, so what do you think about what my son said? Do you think that we're getting married for the wrong reasons, Brother Walter?
All praises due to Allah. Your son spoke so eloquently and so well, and you know that's a beautiful thing coming from a younger brother. You know, and you can tell that he's had right guidance and has accepted right guidance by the words that he so beautifully espoused from his mouth. I definitely agree. You know, a lot of times we do get married for all the wrong reasons. To all the wrong people, and just not really fully understanding and striving to learn ourselves and the God that created us. So, I mean, in retrospect, as we get older, a lot of times we begin to see those things. But as a younger person who seeks relationships and tries to emulate what, you know, our world and culture tells us is a blessed thing, marriage, we don't always know the proper steps because many of us don't come from that background where we've had good examples of marriage. You know, a lot of us are parents of, are children of single parenting homes and divorce homes ourselves. So we're trying to make a conscious effort to, you know, accept something called marriage that has such a beautiful meaning and a concept of it, but we just don't really know how to in a lot of cases.
Yes, sir. Okay, and Brother Carlos, what you think? Are we getting married for the wrong reasons?
Yes, ma'am. I think we're going with the wrong mindset and looking at it all wrong. I think men see women wrong and women even see themselves wrong, you know, and it's just like, we're liars, you know, we're all a bunch of liars, you know, all of us who got divorced, you know, I mean, because we won't fight to make our marriages work, you know, because if we marry somebody, you know, we like something about them to get married to them, but then once we get married, it all fall apart, you know, that just makes us all liars, you know, like the devil is a liar, You know, it just make us all little devils. You know, so I don't know what it's going to take for us to get this thing right, but we definitely not looking at it right.
Okay. And Sister Sinquetta, what do you think?
I definitely think that, you know, a lot of people get married for the wrong reason. You know, you may have women out here that want to get married because they might want a provider in their life. They might feel as though, oh, I'm a certain age, so I should have a husband by this time of my life or something like that. Some people get married so they can have sex without saying that they're fornicating. You know, so many different reasons why we do it, and I do believe a lot of times we get married for the wrong reason.
Okay. And Sister Patricia?
Yes, ma'am. I totally agree with the sister. We do get married for the wrong reasons. I was very young when I got married, and I didn't even know what to look for, and neither did my husband. So life experience and counsel would be good for us to do before we get married. We need to know what to look for. You know, we've been told we were robbed of the science of mating, so we didn't know what to look for. So in the future, I pray a lot that we get it right.
Yes, ma'am. And let me just go back to finances, because like I said, you know, sometimes divorce is inevitable. However, I want to give some pointers about how we deal with finances when we're going through a divorce. First of all, I want to say deal fairly. And I'm talking to my sisters in particularly, and, you know, I know the MDT, they get mad at Sister Gidget so fast, but that's okay. I ain't got nothing but love for y'all. But, you know, we have to deal fairly, and you have to think about it like this. If you have a man that is your husband, of course, and he's taking care of the household, and he has to leave, and if he has to establish a new lease somewhere, pay rent, pay somebody, whatever it is, you know, and, you know, more than likely, you know, even if you live with somebody, you got to give them some money. You got to buy them food, and then you still got to try to, you know, help the wife with the children and things of that nature. And in our bitterness, and when I say I'm talking about women in general, in our bitterness, we want to hit them in their pocket. Because we're using that as a retaliation tool. And so when we decide to separate, you know, don't separate from your humanity. Don't separate from your decency because you're separating from your husband. Because when you do that and when you deal unfairly, it creates a bitterness. And, you know, everybody, you know, saying, well, you know, don't put no value on your children and, you know, don't be counting pennies when it comes to me or whatever. But you have to understand that there's inflation, you know, there is bad economics, there is, you know, a high unemployment rate against, you know, especially in our community. So, you know, we have to deal fairly when we talk about finances. And I say this all the time. I know, and please don't inbox me, I already know, men are the maintainers of women. I'm going to say it one more again. Men are the maintainers of women. However, keep in mind, sisters, in particularly, that if you decide that you're going to separate from your husband, whether he leaves or whether you leave or whatever, know that if you were a single woman with no children, if you were a single adult woman, you would still have to maintain your house. You would still have to maintain your car. You would still have to feed yourself, and you would still have to pay your utilities. Now, I am not saying that brothers do not have this financial responsibility. However, we have to be fair because we know now in this day and in this time that it takes sometimes two and a half and three incomes just to make it. So why are we expecting all of this money once they're gone? You know, so I just want sisters to consider that if they are in the process of separation or getting a divorce, let's be realistic. Let's not create that bitterness. Let's not use money as a retaliation tool, okay? Because, you know, you want to keep the relationship as civil as possible. And that's for your good and for the good of your former spouse or soon-to-be former spouse or your spouse, either way it go. And that's just a point I wanted to put out there. And the next thing I want to go to, I want to talk about the children because they are oftentimes the ones that are affected the most because they are not a part of, you know, what is the cause of division between a husband and a wife. They don't always understand what's going on between mother and father. And, you know, I want to talk about this separation during divorce because sometimes we separate so abruptly that unless you have had the opportunity, like I have on a regular basis, to sit down and talk with children about the impact of separation, because sometimes we string out divorce worse than we string out engagement. I mean, we could be separated for 2 and 3 years and nobody has the money to get the attorney, nobody wants to file first, and so we're separated for 2 and 3 years at a time, and our children don't know what's going on, but they just wake up one day and dad is gone. They wake up one day, mom is gone. They wake up one day and we're leaving our home that we grew up in, you know, all of our lives. So I want to ask, I'm going to go to Brother Carlos because I know you're the father of some young children. Can you tell me, Brother Carlos, you know, how did you deal with that in your children when the time came that you had to separate?
Well, when we first separated, you know, she disappeared with the children. And, you know, I mean, I actually, she was pregnant, and only one of my sons was born. You know what I mean? It tore me apart. But then after that, you know, it really wasn't a big issue. You know, I mean, I came in and saw him, picked him up whenever I felt like it, you know. And she didn't really trip off of that, you know, but then later on we went through some drama, you know, and I didn't see him for a while. But, I mean, you know, I mean, that stuff is kind of heavy on you, you know, because you have all these ideas for your children. You know, you want them to do this, you want them to be that, you know, and you want to be there, you know, so it eats away at you. But, I mean, we all still here, you know, and I just got to thank Allah for that.
Yes, sir. Okay, and Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, that's something that I was always striving to be a big advocate of, was to try to insulate the children as best as possible through this situation. And it's not an easy task. It's a very challenging, you know, objective to do because, again, you're dealing with emotions, you're human. You're dealing with confusion and sorting out things, and then in the balance of that is the children. And a lot of things race through your head because you don't know whether there's another individual involved or what type of individual is going to come behind you in terms of, you know, companionship with your former spouse and, you know, what influences that individual going to have on your child. No, so not so much that you're jealous, but you're just concerned, and then you don't know whether, you know, that person is being fed proper information about you and will approach you as a man and deal with you on that level, or will they feed into what the spouse is, you know, talking about and, you know, take a side and not try to seek it out for themselves. So it's a lot that you have to process
you know, in that process. And it's just like you really want to try to prepare your children as best as possible, not to speak ill of the spouse, and trying to be mature and take the high road to make it comfortable. Because at the end of the day, whether we understand it or not, you may can't stand the core of the person's existence, but the child doesn't share those feelings. So the child is trying to, you know, please both sides of the fence. And then, you know, if different comments and things are being, you know, said, and sometimes certain parents will start bleeding the children for information and, you know, what is she doing and does she go out? You know, and that puts the child in a very awkward situation. So it's always about trying to insulate the child. And if need be, go beyond, you know, the basic thing and try to get the child therapy to understand what's going on and let the child, you know, heal in its own proper right, because it's a very, you know, challenging thing. And some of us just don't give consideration to any of that. We just go full throttle into how we feel, what we think, how we see it. And, you know, we'll look up 10 years later and the child's like a sociopath, and we're trying to figure out what, you know, what this about. Like, we're supposed to expect the child to handle this in the same manner that we handled it or dealt with it, you know, on a normal level. So it's very intense when it comes to children, in my vantage point, from my vantage point.
Yes, sir. Okay, Sister Patricia.
Yes, ma'am. I'm glad you asked me, because in my experience, my children were basically adults. But the first time that I did move out, my son, who was, I believe he was 17 or 18 at the time, he thought that I left him. And I had to explain to him that I didn't leave you. There are just some things that, you know, your father and I aren't seeing eye to eye with them. And I thought it was kind of strange, because I thought, since my children were basically adults, they would be able to handle it better, but not necessarily. Like I said earlier, my daughter stopped speaking to me, and it really affected them. I didn't think it would affect them to the extent that it did, but it actually did. So I had to do a lot of communicating with them, and, you know, there was a lot of guilt behind that.
Wow. Okay. Sister Sinquetta.
You know, I try to protect my children as much as I possibly could. However, my situation was really crazy, because my oldest son, at the time he was 13, and he knew what was going on, and he knew who my ex-husband was dealing with at the time, because he was the one who told me. So I couldn't really shield him, but so much, because he had firsthand knowledge of what was going on. But that made him a very angry child, you know. And my daughter, she became very depressed, and my youngest child was very emotional, and it was very hard to deal with all of their emotions as well as my own. And you know, it was just a very unfortunate situation that I think now sometimes they still suffer from that, and they're pretty much grown now. So, you know, it's a very hard situation to deal with as it pertains to the children.
Okay, so how many of you, I'm going to ask the gentleman first, did there ever come a time that you felt as though your children were used as a bargaining tool, Brother Carlos?
Yes, ma'am. I mean, like, I just recently started seeing my children again, you know. I didn't see them for like 2 years. You know, I mean, we went through some little crap. But bottom line, yes, ma'am, they are used as a bargaining tool, especially for money.
Wow. Wow. Okay, Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am. Beyond a bargaining tool, I always make a joke to myself, weapons of mass destruction in terms of the children, because a lot of times, you know, with these child support and court system and the way that it is, and I'm not anti-child support or anything like that, but I am kind of, you know, miffed at times how they moderate that, as well as, you know, on a case-by-case basis. And sometimes I believe a lot of mischief has been made, particularly in my case, and I know, you know, some brothers who I've spoken with in the past as well. You know, so, yeah, it can become that. But there's a flip side of that, too, because I do know that there are brothers who will use the, you know, and I know the sisters can identify with this, but that will use the children as well as a means of punishment to, you know, their former spouses or whatever for sex or some other type of favor. So, I mean, it goes both ways, but it's a very immature way to deal with the situation, in my opinion. So, yes, it's definitely like that. I agree.
Okay, Brother Walker, you lost me. What you mean? What do you mean for sex? I'm sorry. That went way over my head. What do you mean? It's a bargaining tool.
Well, I apologize. What I mean by sex, I mean that in the way that a man is supposed to, you know, even at divorce or after the particular separation, you know, a man has an obligation to his children, but sometimes there's some men who will say, well, look, you know, I'll do this if you do this with me, you know, because maybe they still have a certain attraction or a lust to that ex or former spouse. So, you know, the children are used in that way where, you know, it's a bargain, you know, it's like a bargaining chip, and that's not fair because that puts the woman in a prostitution type of way. So, you know, it's a lot of mismanagement on both ends sometimes. And, you know, or, you know, you could get into a situation where if somebody did move on with their life, and then it's like, well, I'm not going to do this because you got, you know, you spending, you know, my money on, you know, these people and all of this kind of thing, or you're doing all of this for them and you're not doing anything. So it's so many different nuances of it that can be dealt with or looked at.
I wish a Negro would. What? You mean he got the testicular fortitude to ask you for? Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing that, Brother Walker. You know, I've been around a long time, but I ain't never encountered that one. I wish a Negro would. I really do. Okay. All right.
Yes,
all right. Woo! Okay, I'm sorry. I have to rise above emotion. Think five times before I speak. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I still say I wish a Negro would. Now. Okay. Lord, I lost my train of thought. Brother Walter, I'm not ready for that one. You got to give a sister a warning. Okay. Okay, Sister Patricia, are we, you know, now I've heard this more so among women than I have men. Are we using our children as bargaining tools? Now, I know maybe not in your case, but maybe in people that you know, encountered about, you know, their particular situation, is it more prevalent among the women to use the children as a bargaining tool, in your opinion?
Yes, ma'am, I believe so. In cases that I've seen, the women do use the children as bargaining tools to get whatever they want from the ex. It's not a good thing. It's not pretty at all. I see it every day. So.
Okay. And Sister Sinclair?
Yes, I do believe that women definitely use the children as a bargaining tool. And, you know, just like Sister Patricia said, I see it every day.
You know, I could be on the job. Not only do I see it, you'll hear a woman tell another woman, girl, you need to take him to court, or take all his money, or don't let him
spend all his money on a new chick, and don't you hear it so much? So yes, I definitely think that women use the children as a bargaining tool.
Wow. So let me ask you, and I just want to ask, you know, because it's so often that, you know, the women are left with the children. And I've heard historically for so many reasons, but 75% of our households are headed by single women. And so I'm just going to ask a question, not for anyone to take it personally, but I'm going to ask the gentleman, Brother Carlos and Brother Walter, did you ever consider or even pursue custody of your children as a first thought, or was it just automatic that they were going to go with their mother? And I'm going to start with you, Brother Carlos.
Joint custody. So, I mean, that was that.
Okay. Okay. And Brother Walter?
Well, initially, my ex-spouse did have the, you know, custody of the children primarily, but it was, I wouldn't say discussed, but it was offered on my part to give me 3 years from the time of the, you know, divorce / separation to, you know, get my footing together, because walking out of a marriage with absolutely nothing and having to start over from scratch, I didn't want to bring, you know, children directly into that. You know, it was tough enough trying to get them on weekend visits and things and having to have, you know, the bare essentials, you know, and then they coming from mom's house with everything, you know, so that was a mental thing for me as well. But, yeah, I did want to, because I had all boys, you know, initially with my children, and I wanted to, you know, have that as a man. I felt as though, you know, I needed to raise my children as they got older into their teenagers, but, you know, their mother so eloquently put it to me, oh, that would never happen, you know, so it was a control issue, and, you know, I didn't want to get into a nasty custody battle, because, again, that takes money, and it takes so much energy from, you know, the children and everything, and putting them in that situation was always my first priority, so, not putting them in that situation was always my first priority, so, yeah, I proposed it, but it was definitely defeated immediately. Like, it'll never happen. So, yeah.
So, is it your experience, Brother Walter, that most men, and I'm just asking your opinion, of course, is it that most men just feel like they're already defeated, and that's why they really don't pursue custody of their children, because history tends to show us that the courts favor the children being reared by the mother. And I have a concern about that, because, you know, I know some fathers do pursue the physical custody of their children, but then most times they do not. And, you know, do you feel like you've already lost the case before you even pursue it, and that's why most men don't do it? Or what is it? They don't feel like they're qualified to? What's going on with that?
Well, you know, I always have a hard time answering for most people, because, you know, I feel like everybody's situation is a little different, but I know different aspects of it, and I think that a lot of times it is in the court's eyes, like the woman is more capable, or, you know, more of a natural, you know, parent to take initial, you know, control of the child rearing. But there are men that pursue it because, you know, they really love their children, and there's some men that pursue it because they're trying to punish the woman. And, you know, you have to look at it from different aspects. You know, what's your motivation? You know, Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan always teaches us, what is our motivation whenever we set out to do something? And, you know, a lot of times if your motivation is crooked, then it really probably won't come into fruition anyway. Not saying that some who have tried and failed and had proper motivation, but it's just really a touchy situation based on what the motivation is and, you know, all of the circumstances that surround it. But, you know, most times the court does favor women to raise the children. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of women know that. Sisters do know that, not just sisters, but women in general, not to speak ill of women, but it can become a real control issue, you know, from knowing that you have all this power and leeway in the court in a lot of cases, not all the time, but a lot of cases. And, you know, it is a defeated mentality for a lot of men. I know I feel defeated every time I have to file a motion, you know, because I feel like, oh, man, here we go again. And I feel like, you know, it's never going to be met with, you know, equality and justice. Especially for me.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. I agree with the brother. I've seen cases both ways. I've seen where the father sues the mother for custody just to be vindictive, and I have seen mothers keep the children from the father to be vindictive, even though the father is in a better situation to take care of the children. So I believe that it should be on a case-by-case basis, because maybe the father is more settled or more grounded than the mother, and then vice versa. So I think it should be done on a case-by-case basis, because we don't, you know, each case is different.
Okay. All right. And Brother Carlos, do you feel already beaten by the court system to even try to pursue sole custody?
No, I don't feel beaten, and simply because Allah is God. So, I mean, that's how I look at it. Whatever happened, you know, it just happened.
Yes, sir. Okay. And so, Sister Sinclair, did you ever consider allowing your ex-husband to have custody of your children?
Actually, we did. We didn't go through the courts per se, but we did. You know, we worked things out between each other, because I felt like a part of me felt still with the anger.
Yes, ma'am, you okay?
Yeah, I was choking. Sorry about that. But
no problem.
Yeah, I felt like, okay, well, he's leaving and he's gonna, you know, have fun and all of that. So what we did was he had the children for 6 months and I would have the children for 6 months. So that went on for, you know, for a few years, you know. I said, you're not going to be the only one, I guess, what's that, producing fancy free while I struggle with the children day in and day out.
Right. Okay, so what do we, you know, I know, Sister Patricia, you said that you had a problem with your daughter in particular. You said she stopped talking to you. So what are we saying, or what do we say to our children when we get, you know, when we separate and when we ultimately decide, to divorce? Because so many times, parents on both sides will spend a lot of time bad-mouthing the other parent. And a lot of times we interject our children into our problems in our marriage because we give them too much information. And in my opinion, a seven-year-old does not need to know that daddy slept around with another woman or that mommy slept with another man. You know, that's just too much information, because you give the child room to judge and form an opinion and then emotionally and mentally separate himself from either parent and look at them in a different light where they become less respectful of that parent. So, Sister Patricia, when it's time to just ultimately, you know, break the bond or whatever, what do should we sit down and say to our children?
Well, you know, like I said, my children were adults, and I know that you would say something different to smaller children than you would as adults. My minister had counseled me and told me not to, because I had done it, I had told my daughter things about her father, and he says, don't do that. Don't do that, because she's always going to have a relationship with her father. And that opened my eyes a little bit, and so I had to stop telling her things that her father had done and talk about myself to her and the things that I was going through and the things that, you know. Are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Okay. I had to go a different route and not give her too much information, and the information that I had already given her was what really hurt her about her father. And so I agree that we should not tell them anything derogatory about the other parent, because they'll always be their parent, regardless of the divorce. And so we have to be really, really careful. And like I said, I don't know what to say to a small child, you know, in the case of divorce. So we just have to be really careful and talk about ourselves and not the other parent.
Okay, and Brother Carlos?
Yes, ma'am. You know, my oldest son, he was one that was most attached to me. So when I finally started seeing him again, you know, it was like he couldn't wait to get me in the corner. So he finally got me, and he jumped on my lap, and he started crying, and he told me that I left him when he was 5 years old, and you know, he was slapping me in the face, and he told me to throw all my stuff away and to move on the front lawn, you know. But I just let him talk, you know. I didn't say that their mother did this, their mother did that. You know, I just let him get it all out. I mean, if anything, I would rather take the blame. I would rather for them to have ill feelings towards me than that. I would rather them respect their mother. You know, I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, because I can take it, you know. So.
But did you ever try explaining to him that, you know, that you didn't abandon them?
Nope.
You know, even without elaborating on the problem, did you try to explain that to him so that he could feel better about you?
No, nope, I don't say nothing. I just let him speak his mind, and I just leave it at that, you know, and then we just go about our day. You know, at the end of the day, they still waking me, I mean, calling me first thing when they wake up in the morning, you know. They want to know when I'm coming back. It's always always about me, so I don't need to say nothing.
Yes, sir. Okay. Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am. My situation with my sons, I pretty much took the approach that, you know, because I didn't quite know how to at the time that their mother and I were separating and divorcing, what to quite tell them, I allowed her to pretty much, you know, give them, you know, that information, and I just tried to be supportive in a way where, you know, I asked them questions that if they had any questions for me or particular things, how they felt, you know, really concerned about those things. But I definitely stared away from, you know, giving my personal opinion and feelings about the situation and just letting them know and trying to reassure them that everybody was going to be fine. And that, you know, we're still going to try to, you know, grow, you know, in our own way. You know what I'm saying? And it was very important not to badmouth their mother, you know, to me. And, you know, that went on for many years. Now, did I get that in reciprocation? No. But, again, it's also about, you know, taking much and just trying to deal. Like Brother said, you know, you just try to eat that and deal with that as a man. And, you know, that helps you with the process and your development. But, you know, in other forms, yeah, I let it go straightforward like it was.
But, you know, with them, I was always, you know, very sensitive to that and did not want them. And then, you know, again, I always took the principle at the end of the day, something Brother Carlos said, you know, at one point you cared about that individual, so you don't spend time just trashing the individual when things go wrong. You know, you try to focus on the good aspects of what drew you to that person, and not that you're caught up in thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to get that back, but, you know, that's the focus that keeps you trying to be civil, and that's what I try to instill with my children.
Okay, and Sister Cinquetta, and then we're going to take a question from the audience.
With me, I didn't badmouth my ex to my children, and I also tried not to let them know too much of what was going on. However, like I had stated before, my situation was a little different, where outsiders knew more of what was going on than I did. So my children was, you know, catching bits and pieces of things as they would, you know, go outside and play with their friends, things like that. So it was very, very difficult for me not to really get into, you know, everything with them and still trying to shield them from, you know, the hurt and the embarrassment of what was going on. And I just tried to reassure them that we, you know, we both love them and we're going to still take care of them and just be there for them as much as we possibly could. And our separation and divorce didn't have anything to do with them personally. But it was very difficult.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, we're going to take a call from area code 215. Area code 215, your mic is live.
Hi, my name is Tyrone. First, I'd like to say Black Power. Let me give Black Power to everybody online.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Black Power. You know what I mean? My mom, you know what I mean? She's a strong, independent Black female. You know what I mean? She brought me up. She never brought me up on my past with her and her, you know what I mean, her husband, which is my dad, you know what I mean. But she never spoke bad about him, but she always used to, you know what I mean, show me unconditional love, you know. I see my dad a lot on the internet, you know what I mean, and he knows where I stay at in Dover and everything. But my dad, you know what I mean, he moves on and moves in to meet a older, fat, white lady. You know what I mean? He knows where I mean. He see me all the time. He don't say nothing to me. You know what I mean? And basically don't care about me. See, me personally, I was in the new Black Panther Party. You know what I mean? I just previously left it for, you know, my own beliefs, my own, you know what I mean, this dispute. But I look at it like this, man. The Black woman is the female goddess. You know what I mean? She knows best. She knows. Again, like I say, she knows what's good, you know what I mean? And Mom Duke knows what's good. And I always love my mom. I respect my mom, you know what I mean? I got nothing but love for my mom, not only my mom, but every Black sister that respects herself. So, you know what I mean? And my dad, you know what I mean? I can see that he's on the wrong path right now. He shows no love. He knows where I'm at. He knew my phone number and everything. You know, I'm not going to contact him because I got some type of ill will. I ain't going to lie to you. Like I said, I'm pan-Africanism. I'm Black Power and everything, and I believe the white people is the devil, period. And I believe that the female that he's with, which is a big white lady, is the devil, you know what I mean? And I'm not trying, you know what I mean, get into his life and start some confusion, I mean, like rowdy and all this stuff. So I let him go on by his way. But the Black woman, some people believe that the Black woman is the God, you know what I mean, is the God. I believe the Black woman is the goddess, and I respect the Black woman, and she knows best. And I know that, you know, I mean, it's that beloved. But they know what's up, period. And, you know, my dad left me. He left me alone. My mom brought me up. I'm almost 30 years old, and I got a conscious mind. I'm a strong Black man. I'm wise and everything. My mom did nothing but the great for me, the best for me. She brought me up the best way she could, and I got nothing but love for my mom. My dad did shit for me, period.
Whoa. Okay.
Black power.
Okay, brother. I think you said your name was Tyrone.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Tyrone, you say you 20, you about 29 years old, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, let me just say this to you, beloved. You know that's a pretty hard blow. You know, to see your father, knowing that he has accessibility to you and he doesn't reach out. However, excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't want to cough on the air. However, you know, that is still your father. And, you know, the only thing that you can do is look at him and learn how not to be. But I don't want you to be bitter. And, you know, I know, you know, you've kind of dismissed him, but in the other hand, I think it kind of bothers you that he doesn't contact you. But you just be a better person. You learn how not to be from him.
Yes. What you just said right there is 100% verified the truth. There's a lot of black brothers out here that learn from their dad how they show no loyalty, no love, nothing. And they learn how to grow up and be a good father to their kids, you know what I mean? And show not for purify and appreciate not only their mom but the queen that and the goddess that the black woman is, period. You know what I mean?
But maybe one day you will reach out to your father and just, you know, have that man-to-man talk with him. And I don't know what the situation was, because that's just like the child who is the son or the daughter of a child molester. You know, no mother would keep her child in that environment. Of course you would remove your child from any association from a person of that nature. So I don't know what your situation is, but I do know that you're 30 years old and you need to try to have a conversation with your father. If it's nothing but to just tell him how you feel, because I think at the end of the day, you will feel better about it. Because
hey,
I
queen,
can tell that it bothers you.
Hey, queen, it does bother me. I ain't gonna lie. It does bother me. But you know what? What the story that I know, That my dad, he left, you know what I mean? I'm on the East Coast. My dad left to go to the West Coast because he didn't want to no longer be on the East Coast, you know what I mean, where we stayed at. He wanted to move on and go to the West Coast. And that's the story right there, you know what I mean? And that's what it was, you know?
Yes, sir. Okay, and I'm gonna let Brother Walter speak to that. Brother Walter, what advice would you have for this young man? Brother Walter, are you there?
Brother Walter said black power. That man said black power. That man
okay.
said black power because he knew.
Oh, goodness.
The man needed to step up and be the father in the house and show courtesy and be a father, not even if he's not even dead. You know what I mean? He cheated. He left the black woman for a reason. I don't know what the reason might be, because he might be a pimp or a player or whatever, but you treated his sister like trash and you wanted to move on and be another and meet up with a cracker bitch. You know what I mean?
Wait, we don't use that kind of language, brother. Hold on.
I use it because it's black power over here, and that's what a lot of black people need to realize. Stop being a slave to white supremacy and stand up and unify and stop being a slave to black or white supremacy and build. That's why these crackers out here got more for a lot of power, period.
Okay. I'm going to put his mic on mute because I don't know what he's going to say next. But Brother Kareem, he's still on the phone. You have any advice for that young man? Because evidently he's hurting.
Yes, ma'am, I do. And it starts exactly with what you were sharing with him.
he's in extreme pain. And when we are in pain, we lash out. That's the bottom line. What we have to understand is just as he said, yes, it is black power. But understanding what black power truly is understanding that that power comes from the creator of the heavens and the earth. And no matter what happens, no matter how negative it may be, no matter how hard it may be, we have to understand that nothing in the universe takes place without God's permission. Nothing. And that being the case, when we truly take the time to rise above emotion, to get out of our feelings, once we've had our anger and our grief, we need to step back. He needs to step back and look at that situation and find God in it. Now, what I mean by finding God in it is regardless of the negative that his father did or the bad feelings he caused, get away from those feelings because they're keeping him from progressing like he was going to progress. And then look in there and find the good in that negative situation. What has that negative situation done for him that's made him a better person? You know, what has it taught him? That's what he's got to do. I mean, and the other thing is that he's going to have to recognize and realize that as long as he harbors ill will toward his father or anyone that's done something wrong to him, that don't mean you absolve him of it, but harboring ill will takes away from your power, his power, to be able to move forward and advance to the optimum, to the best of his ability. And that's the advice I would offer to him.
Yes, sir. And Brother Tyrone, if you want to contact me, you can contact me, brother. I can get you some help. You can contact me at area code 832-304-3115. That's our Nation Building Hotline. You can email me at Gidget, G-I-D-G-E-T, Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, at gmail.com. Brother, we here for you. You know, I'm sorry I had to mute your phone, but we kind of censored this radio. We want to be respectful. I hear your pain, and we're here for you, brother. So I know you're on the line listening, and just stand by. We here for you, so just give me a call if you want to after the show. Okay, listen, family, we are just about out of time. I want to thank all of you for showing up. We lost Brother Walter somewhere along the way. Next week, we're going to conclude this series with what happens after the marriage, and we're going to talk about blended families. We're going to talk about child support. We're going to talk about premarital arrangements, you know, like when she gets another fiance or when he gets a fiance. What do we talk about in the beginning? How do we establish an understanding before we blend that family? And we're going to have some other things to talk about. So before we go, as I started at the top of the hour, we acknowledge the passing of our dear brother Reuben, Real Thoughts Muhammad on Facebook, but Brother Reuben Muhammad of Muhammad Mosque number 45 in Houston. And I'm just going to leave this for Brother Reuben. One nation, one love. We love you, Brother Reuben. Rest in peace. And good night, beloved family. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
For all those times you stood by me, for all the truth that you made me see, for all the joy you brought to my life, for all the wrong that you made right, for every dream you made come true, for all the love I found in you, I'll be forever thankful, baby. You're the one who held me up, never let me fall. You're the one who saw me through it all. You were
because you